Welcome to the Amateur Skeptics Podcast number 322. I'm your host, Brian. Joining this evening is Mac.
I have nothing clever to say right now.
Very good. Dumbass? Oh, no, we can't get to dumbass yet. We have to do Mad Cat.
Of course, it's a legacy.
It's it is. We can't be swishing stuff up like that. And of course, we have the dumbass himself.
Now with new and improved Kung Fu Grip action.
Nice.
Not sure I want to.
Do you have Eagle Eye?
Is that necessary?
I think that if you're going to go with one slightly disturbing G.I. Joe character, I think of all.
Why is that more disturbing than Kung Fu Grip?
Because Eagle Eye G.I. Joe basically was operated by a lever in the back of his, where you would be able to move the lever back and forth and his eyes would look back and forth, but they never quite lined up.
Really?
Yeah.
Really. Okay.
Okay, see, but I'm exempt from that because I'm not using a G.I. Joe Kung Fu Grip. I'm using the Chuck Norris Kung Fu Grip.
Chucky.
Well,
what?
Now that we've done disturbing, do we have anything else fun going on? It's a new year, right? I mean, I'm getting podcasts up as quickly as possible. I don't want to do more than one a day, right? So we'll try to get one up one a day, maybe one every a couple of days, you know, depending on how it goes. But I'm making progress and getting caught up on the backlog, which of course, you know, until we get this show up, I guess nobody will know that. All right. Yeah. Cool. Well, if there's
and
nothing,
you have to get those pictures in too.
Yep. Let's get some artwork. It'll be good. Be good. We'll get, you know, we can look like a real functioning organization again, huh?
Awesome.
We are. Awesome.
All right. Well, if there's nothing going on, nothing else, then it's what time is it?
It is Dumbass's Masturbation Moment, brought to you by the Dumbass Media Empire.
The Amateur Skeptics present Ian's Masturbation Moment, brought to you by the Dumbass Media Empire. The Dumbass Media Empire, bringing you content that touches people while they touch themselves.
You know, the intro thing that I play still says Ian and Dumbass's Masturbation Moment.
This one says Dumbass's.
Yeah, I think that you changed it.
Oh, okay.
You changed it. You are trying to push Ian's legacy out.
How dare you?
It's not on this one.
Study of the evolutionary origins of masturbation.
Yeah, we've talked a little bit about a previous article relating to this about how they traced masturbation through our primate lineage. This new study in the Proceedings of the Royal Society, and it's by Dr. Hilda Brindle and colleagues, and they've got what is claimed to be the largest ever data of primate masturbation. I love that.
I thought that Pornhub was that. Was that data set? But you know, whatever. And Pornhub's is much larger.
Right, we are primates, aren't we?
Yeah.
Brindle, your mouth is cashing checks that you can't deliver on. Shame on you.
So primal.
Apparently, it's published communication from primatology questionnaire.
That's right. Can you give that to a chimpanzee, smeared it with poop, and gave it back to you? I'm not sure how worth it that is. I don't know what you're gonna do with it.
But yeah, they found that masturbation has a long evolutionary history among primates. We've gone over that before. And of course, common to the ancestor of all monkeys and apes, including humans. And they talk about, we're still looking at information about other like primates such as lemurs, lorises, and tarsers, and how much they masturbate. We still have a lot to learn about that. This goes into the hypothesis about why evolution would produce masturbation. And there are a few of them. They list, I think, three here. Is it three or is it two? Anyway, the first one is the post-copulatory selection hypothesis. It says masturbation can aid successful fertilization.
We have definitely talked about this before. The idea that you know, by masturbating, you get rid of dead sperm.
That's part of this hypothesis. That's a they said that about that this might be the and I guess that applies as well. But that, this is just one of the hypotheses. A hypothesis helps us, and it not necessarily about clearing out, because
that was part of it.
Also, the of arousal.
Right. So basically, they were saying edging before sex. That the idea that a that like instead of the alpha, some of the others that might do that. So when they do actually have sex, that they get off quicker because they're more likely to get interrupted. So I'm saying, and then it also says the clearing of STIs.
Right, that's the pathogen avoidance hypothesis.
Yep.
That's just basically that ejaculation clear anything in there. Which I guess, you know, they said that female masturbation remains less clear, but the pathogen avoidance could be a thing that for them as well. Of course, I guess they don't have as strong a flow push thing.
I think urinating after sex would do that for as much as anything. I mean, I'm not sure how masturbation would actually help them with STI.
I suppose that's true.
You know, Brian, that would be true if the penis was going into the urethra.
No, but because of the location, right, it is possible to, you know, pass those fluids. I think that urinating after sex for females is does help with STI.
It's interesting that female masturbation in primate is so much less clear, given that we've documented, especially in bonobo, that female is really common. And it brings titters and everything, but apparently it hasn't sparked as much. They say there's still a lot more data needed female sexual behavior.
Yeah, I think that that's pretty common though in this type of research. That unfortunately there's a male bias with a lot of this type of research.
Well, there's a male bias on research on females using females in humans.
Yep, yep.
Biology as well. And it's a little bit easier to see when the male is going to go after a female. So
I found an article from Healthline talking about peeing after sex. Is it necessary? And it goes through several reasons as to why. And it says that one of them is maybe specifically UTI. So there is some. It's UTI prevention. And it talks about STI prevention. There you go. So.
And it's interesting. This is the largest ever data set of primate masturbation. Don't have that much data on. It seems like that would be something that would want to. I guess the penis is where the money's at.
I guess.
The question is, which database are you looking at? Are you looking at the one they're claiming is the largest database, or are you looking at the one discussed as database? Because there's a lot of female masturbation on that.
Any chimpanzees?
You know, why I think this kind of stuff is interesting.
A gentleman doesn't ask.
You know, I think that, you know, the origins of sex and the evolution of our masturbation and all that are interesting. I think ultimately, though, you know, it's not a, you know, there's an inclination there to demonstrate that, hey, we've been doing this forever and, you know, that it's okay. And I think that, you know, masturbation is okay. I mean, it's a normal thing. You know, look, you know, all the animals do it and all of that. See, it should be fine. While all that's true, the fact that humans want to masturbate should be good enough to allow people to masturbate, right? There should be no shame involved.
It should be.
What's that?
I'm not sure that it's really, we want to find an evolutionary origin for everything.
Right.
But, masturbation is byproduct.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, isn't that good enough?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have a strong sex. It's a byproduct of that.
Yep.
And you would hope that people would realize that, but there's two who are afraid of outside. Well, not listening outside.
Mac, I missed what you said. What
it's absolutely.
Oh.
Yes.
Yeah. There's a piece that you know, we continue to fight against, this idea that some for some reason that there's a moral issue with masturbating.
Right. Yeah, it's one of the, I guess, because sexuality is such an important thing to us as a that when we try to repress it, it just leads to all sorts of, you know, self-recrimination and loathing and doubt.
Well, and even when we talk about morals, we talk about, you know, the Bible. The Bible condemns male masturbation and male homosexuality, male sexuality, and says very little about females.
It does not condemn male masturbation.
I guess
That's not what that story was about.
Well, okay, yes. Yeah, you're right. That was
just recently found out that that is not what that story is about.
No, it was never about what that is. It was about, you know, about putting and dumping his seed on the ground, right?
He didn't do his duty to his in-law by impregnating her. He instead, I guess he finished on her back or something. But
I finished on the floor.
I mean, like, and that was just like, I guess that's anti-Bukake or what?
I don't know.
Shot, but it's like, well, he started off with her. It's like not the same thing as masturbating.
It's all about if that is.
Yeah,
which is why you must sacrifice your firstborn son.
They use that to say that God, you know, doesn't, you know, is anti-masturbation. Was it not Ezekiel? Was it? We talked about this thing. Yeah, but you're right that he had sex with her and then he finished on the floor, right? He masturbated on the floor and instead of impregnating her.
Yep, Onan.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, I like these things. But I think that there's a severe bias toward, you know, even when we're talking about masturbation, to look at males and not look at female reproduction and masturbation.
Absolutely. Well, for the longest time, women are not looked at in any of those in the first place. And
now we've still got like a Victorian sensibility, like women are supposed to like not be in sex.
Right, exactly.
Well, that's because women are not interested in sex. That's why, you know, men have to coerce and force them.
Yeah, right. Yes, exactly.
By the way, the stated views of Mac, the podcaster this evening, do not necessarily match the views of the Mac Podcaster Corporation or any officers thereof. He's being sarcastic, folks.
Yes, yes.
Trust me, he's being sarcastic.
Yes, he's being sarcastic, very. Yeah. But the concept in its own, there's way too many people who believe in certain ways to not roll my eyes about the statement because there's too many believe in them.
All right, what should we move on to here?
Moving.
Do you want to talk about garters?
How to watch porn in Louisiana?
No, let's come back to that. Let's just get a break from masturbating before we move right on to porn. And that's going to be some updates from some stories that we covered last year. I just want to do some updates on those. So let's do something else first.
You want me to take it straight from masturbation to unleash the serpent?
Yes, that's, I think, exactly, yeah. Boy, there's no good way to do this.
Right. So, you know, first off, I recently started learning a lot. Became very interested in, we had a garter snake move in for a few days to get warm and then think she moved into the walls. That's our suspicion.
Probably not in the wall anywhere.
Why?
Because the walls to the outside and that are probably insulated. There's probably nowhere to go. And the way that, because that there's studs every so many, I just don't, unless it, you know, found a way in there. It isn't like mice, you know, like mice can chew their way in and make a home. I'm not sure that a snake is likely to do that.
There's a quarter inch easily between the molding and the tile.
And there's room behind it?
Yeah.
Well, in that case, it could be in the wall.
That goes right over, right where she was at, goes right over next to him.
Okay, maybe there's a path there. That's true. Okay.
So anyway.
All right.
But in the meantime, I added two garter snakes to my house from a gentleman in Utah, Don's Garter Snakes, can be found on Facebook. Anyway, I've had a couple of different species because a couple of the garters that came my way were not... did not survive very long. I now have a Montana wandering garter and a Plains garter female. Montana garter is male. And not too long ago, somebody put out a study talking about the fact that garter snakes they're not just social, as in they den up together for the winter, but they actually have snakes that they hang around with all year. And they've been able to study and found out that garter snakes have snakes that they prefer to hang out.
Yeah, I was reading that too.
That's interesting.
So they form friendships. Their society is basically based around matriarchy. The females tend to set the tone in their society, and that also tracks along with how they reproduce, which is the fact that they tend to reproduce in snake balls. That is to say that you've got one to three females and 10 to 12 males all basically trying to get, you know, somebody's seed into somebody else. So, but anyway, yeah, they talk in the article about that they have certain garters that they prefer. They have different relationships with different garters. They have groups of friends that can be observed together and things like that. After having a Montana and a Utah wanderer housed together and how they behaved, and now having a Montana wanderer and a plains female, I don't know if it's the fact that she's a female that's made the Montana so strangely, or if it's just a snake and he doesn't know this as well. There's a very, very different relationship. It's almost like they're not shy, but they're a little standoffish. Like they will cluster together, but they don't wrap up together, you know, basically like one coil touching. Whereas when I had with the Montana, they basically turned into Celtic knot. They'd have coils upon coils upon coils crisscrossing each other.
Hmm.
And they were very comfortable around each other. Just couldn't find them apart, generally speaking. She also kicked him out of the den when she first moved into the tank. I'm not sure if that's a problem with the fact that the den was sized for two smaller reptiles and now there's a couple of longer and thicker snakes trying to get in there, but she kicked him out of the den. I put more substrate in there so they can dig a deeper den now, deeper and larger den.
It could be after losing the other snake that she has decided to, I mean,
she's new. She's the introduced snake.
She's new. So
oh, she's new.
The one who lost the other snake is the Montana one.
Right. Okay.
By the way, wandering garters, very different appearance from one region.
Yeah.
Utah wanderer has very, very defined, very, very defined large spots on the side. Montana wanderer has much smaller spots that blend into the grayness of the body.
Mm.
And it turns out that they're basically hiding in Montana. The garters are hiding against gray tree trunks.
It is interesting because most snakes are not so social. Like the carpet pythons that I have are not social snakes, right? The only time you put them together is for breeding purposes. You would not keep them together at all. You always keep them separated because they will get into fights and there will be clashing. So you put them together so for breeding purposes, and then you get them separated again.
It all depends on the type of snake on whether they are.
Well, I think that most snakes are more likely to be like that. I mean, I can't think as far as like garter snakes are the most social. I think of all the snakes. I don't think that there's one that's more social than they are because they actually do better in groups. In fact, if you watch Snake Discovery, Emily was talking about how most of the times they put the babies into their own baby bins, but with garter snakes, they will house them together because they eat better when they're in groups. If they put them into the individual bins, that they don't eat as well. So
I saw that one.
Yeah, so what's going on with garter snakes is much different than you know with any other snake.
It is very one of the best at talking one of the best anywhere at discussing a garter snake, and the the garter snake especially is her.
Hognose as well. Garter snakes and hognose.
Well, hognose, yes, and she also the bigger one, the
she has everything.
She has everything now. She has a school. Since they moved in.
So I mean, they're unique.
She even
as
has,
far as their social, their ability to socialize.
Mm-hmm. They are, and she also has a blind one, the one that got run over by a.
Yeah, anyway, we should yeah.
Mower.
Now, stick to garter snakes. But yeah, I think it's interesting that. And just listening to what you're talking about, Mac, about the differences by when you put a different snake in there, about how they react to each other, that's fascinating too.
I think I will say that I think that he knew that it was that he was dealing with a female right off the bat.
It could be, yeah.
He got fumbly.
They're live bearers, right?
They are live bearers,
and the females are typically how much bigger?
The live bearing thing also affects affects their metabolism, because since they are live bearers, garter snakes tend to grow faster and maybe be a little bit smarter because they're not left in a den to hatch whenever. They are actually carried by the mother, and they're always kept in a warmer condition because of, that's how the mother is.
That's true of most boas, as far as live bearers as well. I've never heard anything about them talking about intelligence or growth because of live bearing.
Metabolism, well, yes, but intelligence is my theory. I'm sorry, these suckers.
They are very good at getting out of cages and such. And
I mean, most snakes are.
And hands.
Yeah.
So Woodrow will go hand to hand like four times until he thinks you're not paying attention. Then he'll suddenly jump back.
Yeah. But the thing is, too, is that for people have not studied much about snake intelligence. I don't think there's been an awful lot about snake intelligence
because people
have assumed that they were just stupid.
And I think that is not a great assumption.
No.
Well, any animal that has years and years and years of successful survival without massive changes is not dumb.
Yeah, I mean, the way that we measure intelligence is flawed. I mean, I think a lot of times for these creatures, because I mean, yeah, they don't have verbal skills, right? Obviously,
nope.
But I can tell you, like with the carpet python, I can see when I've got him out, I can tell where he wants to go. And then he'll climb up the mic boom, and then he'll bring his head back down and just watch me, right? He gets comfortable, and then he'll just stare at me. And I know that he's watching me, right? You know, ball pythons, I never got that impression with. The boas are probably a little bit smarter, but, you know, the carpet pythons are much smarter. And the garters might be as well. I mean, they know where they want to go. You know, they're not just going to hang out with you. They want to explore.
They have an agenda.
They have an agenda. Yeah, that's true. All right.
Lizard.
Let's take a look. So, Dumbass, what have you got here?
I have a scientific discovery.
Are you talking directly into the microphone? Are you right? It sounds like you're...
I'm right next to it.
Okay, that's better.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
All right.
Yeah.
So, there are new findings that they found fossil evidence of the origins of photosynthesis. Now, the headline here says, scientific discovery, 1.75 billion how life on Earth, which is pretty inaccurate because this is after life had already been. It doesn't really tell us anything about abiogenesis. It's like one of the things that people confuse. People who, like, say, talk about, evolution always, like, people who are anti-evolution and say, like, talk about the things they talk about are like abiogenesis, like about evolution says that things, but that rock could turn into a dog, but like, no, that's like the origins of life. Evolution,
right? Yeah, they're two different things.
How life evolves,
yeah,
you know, once it's there. But yeah, so like this is making that common, like, kind of like misunderstanding of how science works. What this really is, it's nothing about the origins of life. This is about the origins of photosynthesis. It's the evidence of we had before this that's been pushed back for a billion years, and new fossils date back to 1.5 billion.
It's interesting. I heard a scientist that studied kelp or seaweeds just recently describe all land plants as seaweed that managed to live on land.
Accurate.
It's
yeah.
kind of true.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you look back, I mean, that's where it came from, right? And they progressed on the land, and I mean, and we don't think about it, but all the plants also went through an evolutionary period, right? And are still going through, evolving. We talk about it a lot. Animals, but in humans, but we don't talk about the plants as often. But they also evolved on this.
That's right. And these plants, the earliest plants in particular, the ones that photosynthesize everything, I think they the first extinction atmosphere oxygen, and that guided the oxygen today. How the whole oxygen cycle. Works.
Yep. That's interesting. But it's interesting. And I haven't read the article, unfortunately. But you said so. But photosynthesis life had already begun by the time photosynthesis established itself.
Right, definitely. We don't know like exactly what the first life forms used for energy. Like used that it started in like hot subterranean vents.
Right.
One idea for where they could get their energy from.
Yeah.
They could have something to do with photosynthesis. There are a number of ideas of how that was an early example of which, as we know, took off to such an extent that...
Well, and there would have to be sunlight getting through in order for photosynthesis to begin. And I think when life began, that there was probably there probably wasn't that much light hitting the surface at that point.
Maybe not.
Isn't there a pretty solid theory that when life first began, it was all incredibly large creatures feeding off of radiation?
That might be another dimension, but this current dimension, no.
Oh no, that's their strongest theory on Godzilla. So.
he does present a problem to the idea of evolution, doesn't he?
Yeah,
he does.
We do have to account for that.
Yeah, that's interesting.
He's a hermaphrodite.
I mean, I'm not sure that evolution can easily account for radioactive fire breath.
Yeah, but eating radioactivity. Eating radioactivity does account for it, because it's got to go...
Well, considering...
I mean, yeah, but like other species have tried eating radioactivity, but it never works out like that.
There are animals still in radioactive zone from...
Chernobyl, yes, and they're doing pretty well, I hear.
And they are doing quite well.
Because it's not that much radiation. I mean, when you that's the thing, is that, I mean, there are areas as you get closer to the reactor that are going to be higher, right? But it's like getting a chest x-ray. It's not, the radiation is not, it's not like you walk in there and you melt from it, right? I think that we have this idea
like,
that it's...
the animals will have like a higher rate of tough.
Sure. I mean, yeah, there are definitely issues, but I guess I think that we have this idea that you know, Chernobyl, I mean, there are still people working at Chernobyl, right? I mean, it's not like the whole area was like completely obliterated by radiation.
You're not allowed in for... They're only allowed in for a certain amount of time, and once the radiation meters say a certain amount, they have to get out.
Yeah, I mean, and driving through there, they give you a Geiger counter, you know, and you have to watch the rats as you're driving through there, right? But I guess my point
but
is
you
that
you also have a machine with you that shows how much radiation you have gotten. You have to leave before that.
Yep. Yeah. No, I mean, but there, people still work in those plants, right? It's only one reactor that they had to shut down. Other than that, it's still a working nuclear facility.
Yep.
Oh, I have to ask David all about that. He knows all about that explosion.
Well, I think it recently came up because remember that when the Russians invaded, that's one of the things that they were trying to take over was that reactor to control the power.
Or take the... I'm not going to go any further with that because I don't know what I'm talking about.
Okay.
I could put David on and he would talk you out of your brain about it.
That's okay.
He's told me everything, a lot of stuff before, which was very interesting.
Yep.
But I couldn't tell you.
Anything else, dumbass?
Want me to put him on?
No.
Not from Jessa. Just wrap up. Yep. So, like, it's an important part of the cycle of life on Earth and how things evolved, modified the chemistry and atmosphere, and our biosphere, our form of complex life. So.
Yep.
And Godzilla.
Okay, done.
Never confirm that.
Okay, Mad Cat. So, why don't you, you want to cover this at the end? Shall I talk about my two pieces and you can end with this? Or do you want
to? Yeah,
I'd like
to cover this at the end.
Okay, that's fine. So, last year we talked about Louisiana and their porn law, and basically Louisiana passed a law saying that all these porn sites had to verify the age of the people that were coming to their sites. And so what that has created is that there are when you go to these porn sites now, because the fines are fairly hefty if they're violating them. That you know they have to verify their age, and so there are several they have come up with.
It's a shame that we can't trust people's word on the internet anymore. When click, I am above 18.
Right.
Just,
I imagine there's got to be there has to be a certain amount of ambiguity. I mean, because they are doing geolocating based on IP addresses, which is not perfect. It's certainly You know, as far as country to country, it's pretty good. I'm still questionable. I think something is questionable how, you know, state to state, how exact you can get with that. But regardless, that's how they're doing it, right? They're doing geolocation based on your IP address. And so if you're in one of those IP ranges that's going to be in Louisiana, it's going to flag it and say, hey, you know, we have to have your age verification on file. I still think that this is isn't constitutional. But unfortunately, there has been some challenges to the law, Elizabeth Henson recently. So she lives on a military base, and they went from Texas to Louisiana. But she has a residence is still in Texas, even though they're living in Louisiana for her husband to work. And so she, and when he's gone, she watches porn. And I think that they talk about it, and I think they watch together. The article that I put in here talks about, you know, why it's important to her and how her husband and her are using porn. And so her and some of these other porn sites challenged the law, and that challenge was rejected. The judge tossed it, and we can go into the reasons why. But they aren't important, unfortunately, in that area where they are. You know, it's a fairly conservative court, and I think that even the appeals court that they're going to take that to is the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. I don't know that they can survive an appeal there, and then of course from there it would be, you know, it would be the Supreme Court, maybe the state Supreme Court, or maybe the federal Supreme Court. I'm not positive what the chain might be. I don't know. I think that this is unconstitutional, I think that they're going to have to craft a better argument against it to get it through the courts. But so far they've been unsuccessful in doing that. And this first challenge has gotten tossed, and we'll see what the appeals process does. I'm trying to imagine the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals disagreeing with the lower court in this scenario. Of course, I haven't read their argument. And I'm not positive, you know, I don't know. I'm not hopeful that they'll be able to overturn this in Louisiana. And that's unfortunate, because I'm afraid that other states will start looking at this as a framework, and we're all going to lose a right. And
it does seem kind of ridiculous, because it's, I mean, like, teenagers are just rolling their eyes like, yeah, that'll stop us.
Well, I mean, you're right that getting around it is not difficult. Right.
You know, there's a couple factors. When the Constitution was originally framed, they did not have access to cable or DSL. They didn't have access to broadband at all. They were only in dial-up. And
wait, did you get this information from Trump?
I did.
Oh, okay, go ahead. Continue then.
The same speech about the lack of airport time.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yep. Yep. I'm aware of the speech.
You know, the bottom line here is that. If people want to watch it, they're going to watch it, and they're going to find a way to watch it. And most likely that will be by setting up some sort of a VPN through the Netherlands.
Well, you don't even have to do that. I mean, at this point, setting up a VPN and just going to, you know, somewhere in, you know, going to Texas or somewhere else in the U.S. is good enough at this point. Right. And you're right that you know, NordVPN, it would be a great solution. ExpressVPN, which is the VPN primarily that I use, that's a great solution. Yes, there are ways around this, right?
Well, hold on, Brian. Are we actually putting ourselves in the position of people how to do this? Because, you know, it seems kind of dangerous for us to tell people to download and install a VPN software and set it up in the recommended fashion.
Yeah, I mean, we're not saying that this is what you should do. We're just saying that it's something that you could do. You're exactly right. We're not going to give people all the steps, right, that you just outlined.
No, of course not.
No. Anyway, so there are a couple of options, right, as far as to do this. But there are some ways that you can use age verification systems, right, and verify your age, and then use that. The problem is that those are run by the state. So now you're telling the state your porn habit. And I have a real big problem with this because I don't know what the privacy implications are, and I don't know what data they're going to collect. And you have to, and at this point, so like the woman who from Texas who's living in Louisiana, well, you have to have a Louisiana state ID in order to in order for these services to work, because hers is from Texas. So right now, I couldn't go from Texas, go to Louisiana and watch, well, I couldn't use the ad verification process to watch porn while I was in Louisiana, right? I would just have to use my VPN. I don't know. I don't like – there's so much I don't like that. There's potentially legal ways to deal with this. But isn't the next step then to start attacking VPN services? And I just don't know how you do that.
Yeah, but we're talking about the Republican Party. They can't even spell VP.
We're talking about, here's the thing that kills me, is we're talking about the party that claims to get, that they want to get government out of your life. But yet,
yeah,
unless well, it's...
They want it out of your life. They just don't want it out of your bedroom.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly. And there's the big problem, right? It's so hypocritical. These laws are so hypocritical.
They don't want it in your making life.
Well, And the idea that we're protecting the children.
Yeah, it's like...
As if they can see out the gut.
It's such a stupid thing that we expect that children who see porn are going to be scarred by it, that we need to protect them from seeing this. They're going to be fine. It's just porn. It's not damaging or scarring.
Right, but we're...
I mean, like...
We're talking about people who don't want to talk to their kids about it. They'd rather try to hide it from them, right? I talk to my kids about porn. We tell them that it's not real, right? Of course, now, you know, my youngest is 18. It's not real. But this idea that you can just protect people from everything, right, instead of, like, talking to them and teaching them how to make good decisions is appalling.
And, I mean, porn, like, the criticisms of porn are just like the criticisms for any other kinds of, media. It's like unrealistic depictions. Yeah, they're trying to make it exciting.
Yeah,
right?
It's not real.
It's there for your titillation, just like other forms of genre storytelling or whatever. It's there to like invoke certain emotions. This one, it's meant to evoke sexual arousal, but it that doesn't make it like any more dangerous to get a crazy idea about than any.
I guess, yeah. I think that one of the things, though, that they might actually be able to go after this law on is its vagueness. It's hard to know if you've got a site like what our site. I mean, we don't show any pornographic images, but we certainly talk about porn a lot. Should we be preventing our content from going to people in Utah? The problem with
we're not selling it, so I think that's a little.
Well, but I don't think it matters if you go to porn. If you go to Pornhub, right, and you try
right,
to
that's right, then. They're not selling their.
They're not selling. I mean, you can get a lot of that for free. I believe, having not tried it today.
Why get into that?
So anyway, I mean, they have to block this, right? It's not just free. Mm-hmm. That it's not paying for the content that matters. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. And there are probably a lot of people who put out material in a variety of ways that can't police all of them.
Yep, you can't. But they can police the big ones, right? They can get OnlyFans potentially, right? And I guess OnlyFans is not all their stuff is pornographic. Most of it.
I mean, like OnlyFans. I mean, like I think a lot of it is that
behind a paywall.
You see the good stuff if you pay for it, and if you've got the credit card to pay for it, you're probably an adult anyway.
Well, that's the other thing, right? That I was thinking of is that the moment you pay for something like this, that's probably an age verification of itself.
If you pay for it by credit card, either you are an adult or your parents are.
If you can pay for it by credit card, right? Exactly. You know, remember that Pornhub still does not take credit cards. Nope.
What does it take now?
That's one of the stories we cover. Going back to stories we covered last year, is that because of the crackdown that these processors did, Visa, MasterCard, and other processors, because they were coming back at them because if they had any sort of child porn or whatnot on the sites, you know, they were basically threatening these porn sites. And that's one of the reasons that OnlyFans almost dropped all their porn, was because they weren't going to be able to take credit cards anymore. You know, the threat of the sites not being able to take credit cards. It's still a problem.
Talking about that.
Yep, it's still a problem.
What are they doing instead then?
Well, if you look at Pornhub, it gives you some options on, you know, doing a doing different types of payment. I had looked at this at one time. I don't know, but I'm pretty sure they still.
Is that the primary use for Bitcoin now?
I don't know if they're taking Bitcoin or not. Let's see. If I go to sign up, well, this doesn't tell me how to pay for. I don't know. I'd have to. I don't know. At this point, I don't know. I'm pretty sure that they still do not take Visa, MasterCard. You know, they're not taking credit cards. That they stopped doing that, and they're still doing quite well, right? Maybe I should. Let's see if I buy a 1 month. Let's see what it says. What are my options for paying Pornhub premium account for? I don't know. I'm not finding anything that's on Pornhub's site. I'm finding a lot of third party stuff that looks very sketchy.
Yeah.
Very sketchy.
That's par for the course.
Yeah, I don't know. That would take a little bit more research, but my understanding, I still think that they are not taking Visa, MasterCard, or any sort of credit
Except
card.
Except for maybe the third party, Mike.
You're gonna have to figure out how they're making money sometime.
I think that you can pay through direct deposit through a direct connection to your bank, you know, and stuff like that. I remember looking at some options of how to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But you,
PayPal?
Yeah, I don't think, maybe Venue, say Visa continues Pornhub banned. So no, you definitely can't use Visa. So I don't know. I don't know. I guess at this point, I don't know. I know that they're not taking Visa and MasterCard. I'm not sure how people are paying for accounts. So yeah, and I'm totally derailed from what I was talking about.
Well, I guess let's move on to Mad Cat's thing.
No. Let me cover one more thing. Real quickly, and that's the TikTok ban in Montana, which that law has been, I think it's been enjoined, I think is the language. Anyway, it didn't go into effect. That one, they, you know, which also seemed completely ridiculous, right? If you're in Montana, that you weren't going to be able to use TikTok. That one has been set aside, but I think Republican lawmakers are looking at that and maybe looking at stuff that would not target TikTok directly that might target all social media, which would be okay with me. I think that attacking TikTok was wrong. I think that the way that they did it to attack just TikTok is problematic. But mm-hmm. I think that if they're going to look at all social media, I mean, they still hate that law that was passed. That basically, you know, that what section 21 or whatever it is. I forget what it is offhand. You know, of course, they're still they like that until they don't. Type of deal, but TikTok is, you can still, if you're on Montana, you're still okay to you know, to get on your TikTok and get all your misinformation about finance, about dating, about health advice, all that misinformation is still available to you. But this is one that I'm gonna
off of TikTok.
TikTok is right now, as far as social media platforms go, I mean, they're the worst with misinformation, I think, at this point. There's just no guardrails. So, I don't know.
Really? Twitter haven't caught up with them yet?
Twitter, okay. If you want misinformation about health and that and finance, then I think you go to TikTok. If you want if you want white supremacy material, I think you go to 4chan and X, you know. And then I think that if you want to get what is Facebook? What is the best Facebook scam out there?
Facebook?
Yeah.
If you want to get burned for anything.
Yeah. They're all bad, right? As far as like, I mean, there's so many scammers and people really doing a lot of harm on all of these platforms. So now we can move on to Mad Cat stuff. But I just wanted to say that, I mean, that I'm still watching that to see what's going to happen. But right now, you know, it's still available, and I still think it. I still think what they're trying to do is going after just TikTok. To protect our information from the Chinese is crazy. But we'll see what happens. We'll keep watching.
Chinese could get it.
Well, they probably already have, right? I mean, the places.
They probably own the servers.
They
they don't. I mean, that is one thing. I think that, I mean, the, I don't know. And I don't think that the information that TikTok has about us personally is that much more valuable than
really
what than what they're getting other.
Yeah, I mean,
how much how much personal information do you have to give TikTok anyway? Right?
Not a lot.
So I'm not sure. I'm not sure that the, I don't know. I just don't think. I still don't think as far as like giving up your information. I think that Facebook is probably still. They're all bad.
Facebook,
but, you know,
yes. I
Facebook
mean, I
worse.
More to Discord than anything.
Discord is bad. You know, as far as that can be bad. And the scams on Discord have ramped up as well.
They ramp up everywhere.
Exactly, right? No place is safe from them. And but
exactly.
China using, you know, personal information from TikTok.
Don't think so.
And here's the other thing is that, right. I mean, I think it's ridiculous for us to say, you know, this is the nanny state. You can't watch porn. You can't use TikTok. You know, because there might be some harm somewhere. It's like, you know what? People have got to be left alone to make their own personal decisions about what's harmful and what's not. And the states should not. I think that there's you know, clear freedom of speech violations with both the TikTok ban and with the porn ban.
Yep.
So, anyway, all right. And unfortunately, if we're going to end on this, we're not ending on a good note.
Well,
but let's talk about Brian
enough.
Barczyk.
Brian Barczyk has been going through. Okay,
first
off,
who
Brian
is he?
Barczyk. What?
Who is he?
Who is he?
Who is he?
Brian Barczyk is a Michiganite, Michigan, USA, and he had started up at first a reptile
vlog,
shop, which he was selling reptiles and such, and then he started up the Reptarium, which is a place you can go to see different types of reptiles, and then he started up this Legacy Aquarium, which is supposed to be done this fall.
I think more importantly that he is a YouTuber, right? And he calls it a vlog where he's been documenting everything he's been doing.
Yeah, and the vlog was started. He was doing it every single day for. I think it was about 5 years.
Okay.
Every single day he would vlog what he was doing. And he, when I first started watching him, there was a whole bunch of controversy about how he ran things. And I watched and I became very interested in what they were doing, the whole situation and everything. But he started out as a vlog. He did vlogging, and that helped everything as well. And he taught people all about snakes, and he was teaching people to respect the animals and to getting people who were scared of snakes to not be scared of snakes. He let them go at their own pace type of thing.
Sure.
And so he had the vlogging, and he had the animals there, and then he got into the Reptarium, made the Reptarium so that people could come in and see them, and he would take them up for kids parties and for schools and all this other stuff. And he was doing a lot of teaching and everything, and of course stuff costs, so of course he's going to charge for stuff. That was one of the complaints people had, was, you know, he just wants to teach, or come on. But last March he found out that he had cancer, and it's one of the worst cancers to get.
Pancreatic.
It's
right.
Terribly not survivable.
Yeah.
Right. And even worse is that he had one of his big veins going directly through the cancer directly around it and connected to that particular vein, which you could not operate. They were looking at operating, but there was no way they could do with that. So he went through chemo. He went through different processes and experimental stuff that doctors were doing and everything. And it would get better, and then it'd get worse and better and worse. And then he started up the Legacy Aquarium, which is going to be pretty much like the Reptarium, but with a lot more.
It's 30,000 square feet.
Mm-hmm. It's once it's done. I've seen what they were putting together because I watched the vlogs a lot, and it's going to be amazing. It's just a lot of wonderful stuff. And so his cancer has gotten worse, and there was another test he was looking at getting into, but I don't know. I don't think those tests he was able to go for. And he made an announcement on the 5th that he would soon be going
to hospice.
Yeah. Yes, he would soon be going into hospice, and that's where he's going to be passing away, probably not too long from.
It is a shame. I mean, the thing that I think, obviously there's some controversy. There always is with people that are in the public eye. But he is an educator. And one of the things that they try to do with all this is to show these animals to people and to give them experiences with the animals. It isn't like you go to a zoo and you see them behind glass is one thing, but it's actually getting to touch a snake, getting close to an alligator, and seeing these animals and giving that experience is what helps people to have the motivation to protect them later. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what a lot of these guys are trying to do. And this is what Brian was trying to do as well. It was is to give people experience with animals, and to show them just how neat they are.
Yeah, and he was trying to do exactly what his favorite person he looked up to, of course, and that was Crocodile Hunter Steve.
Steve Irwin.
Steve Irwin was a huge loss too.
Yeah. Yep.
Yes. Yes, and I believe it's a very huge loss when it happened. I mean, I've been part of watching what's going on and part of talking to people in the forum, the stuff down below the content and everything. That's how I met a lot of people the ball pythons is through reading under his YouTube. I found Justin from my animal house on there, and I mentioned something to him and went to his site, and we talked to each other, and we were friends from the start of our a little further in with his channel, but we got to know each other, and that's how I got into those. They had podcasts for a while as well, Reptarium did. And I'd watch those and such as well. And to me, it was what he was showing, saying and everything was great. I mean, there were some things that were, of course, he's not going to be able to tell you everything in one short little thing, but he taught a lot of people about snakes, especially the ball pythons. And is this going to be a big loss?
Yeah, there is a lot of people, though, that ball pythons in particular. I mean, there are a lot of people out there with those. But I've seen, I watched a couple of his, with his snake breeding videos, where he was going through all he was getting the babies out, the ball python babies that they had that year. And he, one of the things that he's excited about these creatures and showing them and the different morphs. And I think that's interesting. Certainly, there's a lot of ball python morphs out there. In some ways, though, I still think that, just how they look in nature is just as pretty. But they're doing, the breeding programs are neat. Yeah, they produce some interesting things.
Well, also, in the, unfortunately, in nature, they are being killed as well, like an awful lot of other animals. And if they don't get caught and go to something else, I've seen there was one thing by Dav, the big guy,
David Hoffman. Anyway, or David, yeah, Dave,
Dave Hoff.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know what, he did a whole thing on ball pythons. And they talked about how ball pythons they're going to get caught in the wild, and they're going to get caught in the wild and go into the pet trade, or they're going to get caught in the wild and go to the skin trade, because the people catching these
don't care.
It's not about caring. It's that's how they have found that they can make money. Right. And they need some way to make money in these places in Africa. And so, unfortunately, the ball python, say, catching and selling ball pythons, is, you know, brings it. If they could do something else, they probably would, right? It's
yeah. I think you need to clarify skin trade. Are you telling us that they're being sexually trafficked?
Yeah, no, they're not. They're more like for witch doctor medicine, right? And stuff like that. It's
and
pretty disgusting.
I
assumed you were talking about for like snake skin.
That's a possibility too. Sure, that could be part of the skin trade. I mean, but a lot of what he showed when he was traveling around and those areas, what they would take the ball python, and a lot of them were just dried, and they would witch doctors would use them for.
And
that's
drying doesn't mean killing them first. It means letting them die.
Well, and that could be too, right? I mean, yeah, I don't know how any of those things were killed. Those pictures, right? But when you've got, you know, corpses of 50 some odd snakes or more, right? I mean, and they're selling them as, you know, as witchcraft. But if they didn't end up there, they might have been more likely to end up in the pet trade. And at least in the pet trade, you know, they're cared for. I don't know. Go ahead. Sorry.
Has Brian asked for any kind of to make like donation, any kind of wildlife charity or anything like that?
No.
Yeah, there's and others.
Yeah, is there? Yeah, I mean, it would probably be for Legacy Aquarium, right?
We should probably plug that a little bit if we're gonna mention
the Legacy Aquarium and the Reptarium and.
Yeah, he's involved in outreach projects.
And he does a lot of things for themselves. He knows a lot of animal content makers for these kind of animals. He also started up Sugarcane. I forget the name of it. It's a newer project where 2 years ago he started where people for animal information, the content makers would get together and talk to people. You know, you could go and talk to them, these content makers, at this special big reptile thing.
He put on a it was like a conference.
A conference. It's gone 2 years now, and oh god, people who are going to smack me for not remembering. But we know how my brain goes.
When he put out his blog saying that this, you know, basically this is the end, I think that's what he called it. He didn't say anything specific that he wanted people to give money to, but his Reptarium and his aquarium project can't be free.
You can't go wrong with saying like donate to the World Wildlife Fund if you.
Yeah.
Well, basically, he has told people that if you just take care of the animals and make sure they're doing well and, you know, keep on trying to dispel the myths and misconceptions around them. And he's been telling people that for many years too. The Reptarium.
Is there anything else you want to say? Because I think we've pretty much, I mean, as far as I can, I think it's probably.
Let's just end with donate to the World Wildlife Fund.
There we go.
Get your pet spayed or neutered.
If you can go to the yearly reptile show, go for it, because there's an awful lot of content providers and creators who know exactly like what they're doing, like the one we mentioned, Dav and Dave, and from Snake Country. We talked about her a little while ago.
That's fine.
You know, help as you can help, and watch these content makers as well. There are so many great people that put out content about animals. Listen to that. Listen to each one and make sure that you're getting proper information, mind you. But, you know, watch them. They know what they're doing. David, the big guy, knows. Snake Country knows. I mean, since reptiles, they all go to these things too for the convention once a year.
All right,
go see these guys and gals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds like, from your voice, it sounds like something that is really, really personally affected. I am really sorry that this guy has passed.
Thanks. All right. And say goodnight,
everyone. Goodnight, everybody.
Goodnight, everyone.
If you've made it this far, that's an hour of your time you're never getting back. But the Amateur Skeptics appreciate you giving that hour to us. If you'd like to tell us how you felt about spending that hour with us, let us know at WTF@amateurskeptics.com. The Amateur Skeptics podcast is distributed under a Creative Commons Share Alike No Derivatives 3.5 license. Intro music by Peter Cannell. Find more of Peter's music at soundcloud.com/PKANOL. Exit music by OFM. Find more of their music at myspace.com/OFMHQ. Artwork for the Amateur Skeptics by Sean Smith Ford. Copyright Shadow Knight Digital Portraiture.